I'm Lou.
And I'm Jackie. And we're here to pump.
To pump.
You up.
You up.
That was even, that was so much worse than I expected it to be.
Let's try one more time. Hang on. I'm Lou.
And I'm Jackie.
And we're here to pump. You up.
This is the worst idea I've ever had.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's another episode of Two Peas on a Podcast, where we review the latest and sometimes greatest movies every week. Gerald here with you. And over there on the other side, he's dropping the dumbbells, the studly gym rat that he is, Nicholas.
I don't know why. Welcome. I'm like hulking up over here. I don't know why I'm hulking up.
Yeah,
or whatever's going on there. Because nobody bought it at all. Like, audio audience, I'm glad you can't see this. It's right now. It's embarrassing.
They were on the board when they heard that cold open, man. That was a fly by the seat of your pants idea you had there. Hans and Franz. You can never go wrong, though.
I don't even know why I even thought of it, but it just was a thing that happened.
It was great. Love Lies Bleeding, by the sophomore film by Rose Glass, is the review this week. We will be getting there shortly, talking about this new A24 kind of sexy, erotic, neo-noir crime thriller, I guess. I don't know. It's a very interesting film, and we will discuss it. I'm looking forward to talking to you about it.
Touches a lot of different little genres, doesn't it?
It does, for sure. So we'll get into that here shortly. That'll be the main review. We got a new segment on the show we've been playing with the last few weeks. It's called Spill the Peas, and we're going to get into that right now and talk about some entertainment news.
Now, this is a world premiere. Gerald has not heard this.
Yep.
Brand new. Sound intro to Spill the Peas. Here we go.
Oh, no, not the peas. Not the peas.
So I know you know what that's a reference to. I know you know that scene.
What is that, though? No, tell me.
Come on now. You know it. I'm going to play it again.
I'll probably know when it.
I know you know it. Ready?
Not the peas. Not the peas. Ah!
Oh, okay. The bees.
Yeah.
Okay. Nick Cage.
I don't know why. I just thought of it. I was just like, this would be really, really fun. And then I just threw some other random sound effects in there. So yeah, there it is.
It works for me. Dan, hopefully you can use that.
I'll send him the raw one, because I know.
Send him the wave or whatever. So yeah, there you go. Spill the peas. So in this segment, guys, we just kind of talk about anything that may have come up in the last week or so that's noteworthy. But also, we could really call this segment, Does Nick Give a Shit About This? Because the last time we did this, not counting the Oscars discussion, which honestly, you probably didn't care about that either. But going back to the original iteration of it a few weeks ago, you didn't really care about any of the news stories. So let's see what you have to say about some of the ones I took note of this week.
Now, I just want to point out, listening audience, Gerald seems invested in this idea of getting me to read the news stories ahead of time. So
not
much so
necessarily.
And he even put them like in the Google Drive or whatever that we use for the show.
Right.
I'm never going to look at them ahead of time. Because I think it's a better reaction live in the thing. But yes, a much, much better aim for this segment would be, does Nick care about this? Because, like, it's got to be something I'm really, really passionate about. Or if it's not something I'm passionate about, it's got to be something that really is just like, ooh, man, that looks super cool. Or whatever, for me to really get attached to it. So.
Well, how about this? Because this is something that I'm actually torn on a little bit. I have the Scream poster behind me. It's probably in my top two or three horror movies of all time, the original Scream from 96. We got news this week that Neve Campbell, who was absent from last year's Scream 6 due to a salary dispute, and she didn't think she was going to get paid enough, so she was not in that film. She's coming back for Scream 7. And she announced it on her Instagram by posting the cover page of the script that they sent her for it, and said that she was so excited to be going back to the Scream franchise that she obviously helped create back in 96. And not only that, it's going to be directed by Kevin Williamson, who I don't know if you recall was the writer of the first film. He also, he's a great screenwriter.
Even more importantly, Dawson's Creek, or Dawson's Crack, as our good friend Wayne from The Countdown would say.
And I was going to say, he is a great screenwriter. He also wrote Seven, which is one of my favorite films, David Fincher's Seven. But those two people being involved have me excited. The whole Melissa Barrera exiting because of her, I think it was pro-Palestinian comments that she made in about the Israel-Hamas war, which I don't want to get into because I'm not really educated on it. But she made some statements about it on social media and whatever, and she got dropped by Spyglass, which is the production company. And then shortly after that, Jenna Ortega, who played her sister in the last couple films, also exited, although she cited a scheduling conflict. But a lot of people think it's because she was trying to be in solidarity with Barrera there. So Neve Campbell's coming back. What do you think of this whole, I mean, because it's kind of like a lot of drama around this, which kind of has me worried that that's going to overshadow the film. But with Williamson and Neve Campbell, I don't know, man, I can't help but kind of be a little excited about this. What do you think?
I don't care.
There it is.
I mean, listen, I'm not the horror guy. I'm not the horror. You're the horror guy. I do love the first Scream. I think the first Scream is landmark horror. Absolutely wonderful. I don't know anything about any of the drama that went down with whatever happened with whomever. I haven't seen a Scream movie. I think I saw two way back when it first came out. I don't think I've seen any of the other ones. I'm not going to see the seventh one. So it's like it's a nothing burger to me. I mean, Neve Campbell was great in the first one and the second one, as I recall. I love Kevin Williamson. I always have time for him just because, again, the crack, Dawson's Crack. That was you know, defining show of my youth when I was a teenager.
You Hit Me with the I Don't Care was beautiful, by the way. That was just wonderful.
I gotta get sound cues for that, so I don't even have to talk to you during this segment if I don't want to.
Right.
I could just, you'll ask me a question, be like, Nick, what do you think about this Scream news? And I could just be like,
don't care.
It'd just be like that. It'd be like I don't even have to talk to you if I don't want to. I'm trying to pare down the amount of time I have to talk to you during the show. If you have noticed,
understood.
So get it down to that point.
Understood. Eventually, it'll just be a 5-minute rant, and then you'll just be like, I don't care. And then it'll
be entirely nonverbal. It'll just be like, there was, what episode was it? I forget what it was. Because I watched the video version the week it comes out, like the day it releases. But then I don't catch up with the audio version until I catch up in my podcatcher because I have so many podcasts.
Oh, yeah. Dan had released the wrong audio.
Was it Mean Girls?
You had to re-download it. It was Mean Girls. Yeah.
So the episode comes out and it literally, it's the funniest thing in the world, the original audio. I don't know if you can still find it anywhere, but it literally just sounds like Gerald having a conversation with no one. And like he's got like an imaginary friend that no one else can hear. It's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
It was
so amazing. And then I think Dan did fix it, but
yeah, he went back and you just have to re-download
if
it.
If you were one of the lucky ones that got that first download of that, please listen to it because it gets funnier the further it goes, because it's just Gerald like pitching these talking prompts and questions and stuff, and then
silence,
stone cold silence, and then he responds like, oh yeah, it's funny, unintentionally the funniest thing ever. It's amazing.
To wrap up on this thing, though, I guess as somebody that's not really invested in the franchise and in horror, does Neve Campbell coming back interest you any more or less?
I didn't know Neve Campbell wasn't in a Scream movie at some point. I'm pretty sure she was in what?
She was in all of them except six.
All of them except six. Okay. So, yeah. So, like, I didn't, like, I think I can't even remember. Like, it's not something I've followed enough to know that she wasn't part of the sixth one or that there was any of this weird drama.
So, it's not like, you're not like, oh, Neve Campbell's coming back, I got to see it. You don't really care either way.
So, it's going to be a Scream movie. And so here's my problem with Scream movies, because I know I'm pretty sure I've probably seen three, two, maybe I have. I don't know. But like, at least, and I may be wrong about the subsequent ones, 4, 5, 6, because I don't know. I haven't seen them, so I can't comment on them. But like, it always is like they've got to keep, because the first twist in the first one was like genius, right? Like it plays on that expectation of, oh, we're expecting it to be this killer, but because they had the spoiler alert for a like 30-year-old movie, they had the two killers in that movie. It's a genius, genius thing of playing against your expectation, because basically when you watch a movie like that, it's a mystery. Like, who could the killer be? You're checking people off of a checklist in your mind, right? But then by some point in that movie, you've seen every single character interact with or be chased by or threatened by or whatever the killer. So literally there's nobody on your list. It takes everybody off the list, and it's genius. But the problem I think with the subsequent ones is they just keep trying to kind of, they keep like, get go, because this doesn't the second one, like, then there becomes a movie based on the whole thing inside of the universe with Stab.
That's and the third one, but yeah.
The third one, whatever. I don't know what happens. But like, it's just like it has to keep trying to outdo that original twist and keep trying to outdo the meta-ness of the previous ones.
Yeah,
sure. I don't know if that's fair to the future ones, because like I said, I haven't seen them, but diminishing returns, I feel like, in the first, from across the first three anyway, you know?
Yeah, no, I get it. I was just curious as somebody kind of on the outside if that did anything for you.
If I had known any of that before, like, then maybe, like, if I was somebody that was like Neve Campbell out of Scream 6 sound a little bit familiar. I don't know. But I seem to have, like, it's like all other horror movie news. As soon as I see it, I'm just like, right back. Like, right. When you tell your kids to do something and then like 5 minutes later, they're not doing it, or vice versa. It's like the same thing. Yeah. Horror movie news is like that. I'm a 10-year-old kid. You can go pick up your clothes. Okay. I'll do it.
Sure.
Done.
So here's something you might care about. Hang tight. The Batman 2, Matt Reeves's Batman 2, got pushed back an entire year to October of 2026 before we're going to be getting the sequel now. Did you know this? What do you think about this? Is it disappointing?
I didn't know about this. And didn't we have to wait? Weren't there, because of COVID and stuff like that, but weren't there all sorts of delays with the first film too?
Yeah, there were.
So it's par for the course. So it doesn't really surprise me. We've seen this time and again, like the modern movie going audience's memory for things is minuscule at best. Yeah. And they don't do well with having to wait a specific amount of time in between films to wait to see the stories concluded or however that necessarily plays out. So, it's Batman, and people always will seem to line up for a Batman flick, even though I don't necessarily think the first one was any kind of mind-blowing box office breaking movie or anything.
I was going to ask what you thought about it. What did you think about it, though?
The first one?
Yeah.
Except for the Riddler gimp suit, I really, really enjoyed it. I really hated the costume choice. It was absolutely terrible costume choice. I really don't know why they went with like that weird Riddler gimp suit thing. It just
Paul Dano was great, though.
He's great. He's great. Pattinson's really great. Like, everything about it is great. Circus is great. Circus is Alfred in that one, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's, then Jeffrey Wright's
Zoe Saldana, right?
Yep.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yep. Like, it was great. It was really great.
Zoe Kravitz.
Yeah. God, I can't even remember. It's been that long since I've actually watched the film. And I think the thing that I liked the most about it was that it wasn't a Batman movie. It was a Bruce Wayne movie.
I agree. A couple others I just want to ask you about. I know I asked you to watch the trailer for the new The Crow, starring Bill Skarsgård, a remake of the 1994 version. Were you a fan of that in the 90s? I know you and I both have like that alternative rock kind of love or whatever. Did you get into that film back in the mid-90s?
I've never seen it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In its entirety, and I have absolutely no connection to it whatsoever. So when you told me, you're like, oh, watch this. Like, I know people, like, I've seen reactions online of people. Some people are defending it. Some people are up in arms about it because of whatever, because they're nerds on social media and that's literally all they can do because no one can embrace anything different or anything.
Well, that's what I want to ask you, though. I want to ask you what I didn't know that you weren't, I don't want to say a fan, but I didn't know that you weren't like super familiar with the original, because it was obviously Brandon Lee, Bruce Lee's son. He infamously died on the set of that movie.
That everybody knows that.
But it's Skarsgård just looks like very, very different from any iteration we got before, which is fine. Kind of like to your point. That's okay. We don't have to do everything beat for beat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I just didn't know what you. So what did you think of the trailer? What did you think of the look of it? It kind of looks like it kind of looks like John Wick almost.
It looks fine.
Yeah.
Doesn't look bad by any means. But why is why is it so long?
It's like, really long.
When you queued it up for me to watch, I was like, it's 3 minutes long. Why?
It's way too long. Although we will probably be doing that movie on this podcast. So
why is the trailer that long? I don't understand why the trailer was that long. Like I said, it looks fine. It doesn't look bad or anything like that. I'm sorry, Crow original movie apologists or whatever that are going to be upset that whatever. Like, here's my larger thing about remakes of, like, if you remake something for a modern audience, the original audience gets that it's not for them, right? Like, mm-hmm. The studios want your butt in the seats and like whatever, but like they're trying to introduce that thing you love to a new audience, like not just throwing the old film at them again and like trying to bring a new audience into this thing and help them love it and like make you all part of a bigger community that loves this whole huge shared thing.
Like, right, sure.
The original movie's still there. It's like they didn't take the original movie and chain it up out behind a 7-Eleven and they're like beating it with a bamboo cane or anything. Like, yeah. The original movie's still fine. It's right over there. Go watch it if you don't care about the new one.
Yeah, they use it as inspiration. I mean, I kind of agree with you. I'm excited to see what they do with it, but I do love that first one so much that it also has me just a little skeptical how it's going to turn out, because it looks like a much more violent, like, action movie, where the first one, I mean, it had action, but it was, I don't know, it kind of felt more like a, like if a Batman film had, like, gory kills in it. That's kind of like what the first one felt like. So this one looks like it's going to be a little bit more on the John Wick side of things. So, but I mean, I'm excited. I'm going to be seated for it. Like I said, we'll probably do it on the show. Since you're not super familiar with the original, maybe we could review that one on Patreon. You can check out the original.
Yeah.
And then when it comes out, we can do the new one. Because I love The Crow, so I'd be into that. Last thing I want to mention, which is going to be a perfect segue into getting into our Love Lies Bleeding reaction. Nick, I didn't know if this was you, but then I read it was in Michigan. But there was a gentleman. Let me read the headline for you.
I'm so excited.
Love Lies Bleeding moviegoer is arrested for indecent exposure while watching the film in a Michigan theater. And that's the headline on the Entertainment Weekly article that I pulled. But he jerked off in the theater while watching the film and fell asleep with his penis out. And moviegoers behind him took liberty to take photos and video of him sleeping with his dick out. So I just said, I thought it was you at first. I'm like, well, I know what Nick's reviews of the movie is going to be. He must have liked it. But it wasn't you. So what's going on here, man? Did you hear about this?
I mean, I'm going to say, I know Randy from Miserable Retail Slave. Randy lives in Michigan. Randy, do we got talk, bud?
Oh, man, Randy, what did you think of Love Lies Bleeding? Why didn't you have the Dune popcorn bucket, though? You know? I mean, that's still available in the lobby.
Do we know that they didn't have the Dune popcorn bucket?
Yeah, maybe he did. Maybe that's what sparked everything.
I mean, maybe it was like a combination of, you know, you're watching Love Lies Bleeding. There's all the things going on the screen of that. You reach the hand into that popcorn bucket, then you just feel the teeth of that sandworm thingy on your hand, and you're like,
ooh. You got to go for it, man.
Wait a minute.
But he fell asleep. You know what I mean?
I mean, that must have been like a hell of a nut if he literally fell asleep afterward, but
with his dick out, brother, like he didn't even put it away. You know what I mean? It's kind of,
I'm going to also imagine this person was probably very intoxicated
because
you had at least, if you were sober, you would at least have the presence of mind. Like if you were going to crank one out in the theater, you would at least have the presence of mind to put it away before you dozed off for a nap. So I'm going to guess that that's more of a thing, more of like they were probably pretty intoxicated as well. Like if that's not to excuse it or anything. I mean, that's reprehensible. No, granted, no child should be in this, like no little kid should have been anywhere near this theater watching this movie. So hopefully not. But even still,
we don't need to be subjected.
Nobody needs to see that either. You know, yeah.
Peckers please. Out and everything. You know, I mean, do that at home. You know,
leave the nudity on the screen, not in the aisles.
Yeah, I mean. The Doom popcorn bucket made it hard enough for all of us to keep our, you know, members put away. But this guy's just,
I couldn't even get one here. I'm still so upset. Maybe I can get one for my screening of Ghostbusters on Thursday.
Why? Well, hey, you know what? Speaking of wanting to fuck a popcorn bucket, did you see the new Ghostbusters one?
Nope. Fucking,
nope. It's the fucking trap.
Yo, you're gonna lose something. You're gonna do not
true,
put appendages true. In the Ghostbusters popcorn bucket, ladies and gentlemen.
You gotta be careful. All right, Nicholas, we gotta talk about Love Lies Bleeding. But before we get into the meat and bones of this film, we like to start out every review by shouting out to the fans online in a segment that we call One Big Question.
You gotta ask yourself a question.
I have a lot of questions. Number one, how dare you?
By the way, happy St. Patrick's Day, buddy. We're recording this on St. Patty's Day.
I am dressed for the occasion.
You absolutely are not. I am. I have a green Guinness t-shirt on. Here, you have a fucking navy blue polo.
I got this. I got this ready. Here, hang on. I have an audio audience. I have an angry green squishapuss on my head.
There you go. I love when you say squishapuss. One big question. What do you... What do you have? Pick one out for us.
Oh, my heavens. So Chris Yaney,
yes,
asked a really nice question, actually, that really is going to tie into our review of Love Lies Bleeding. Does the aftermath of violence have a bigger effect on an audience than seeing the actual violence and when or when not?
You know what? That's a really interesting question for this movie specifically. I wonder if he saw this prior to asking that.
I would have to believe so, because it's very pointed.
I would think so. Yeah, I don't want to give too much away until we get to the spoiler section of the review, but I'll just say it's possible that the aftermath, but I think it's the way it's filmed and the way it's framed. I think of a movie called You Were Never Really Here with Joaquin Phoenix that came out a few years ago. Did you ever see that one? He plays like a hitman who's protecting this like 12-year-old girl or whatever.
I've heard of it.
Well, there's the filmmaker there does this really interesting thing, and it's not, Rose Glass doesn't really go to this extent, but they do a really interesting thing where Joaquin Phoenix will have like a hammer and he's getting ready to kill a guy and bludgeon them on the skull, and he'll be like thrusting down with a hammer, and it'll hard cut away to the next scene. And you find out later that the dude was killed or whatever, but you don't see any of the violence, and it just kind of deals with the aftermath of him doing it. So I think that it can have an effect, but I think from a visceral experience perception, I think the audience might react more to the actual violence happening on screen. You know, like that might be more of a, might get more of a reaction from people. What do you think?
I think it depends on how the film is kind of playing out tonally too, because you can use that to play against the audience expectations. Think about something like, remember when you saw Midsommar, Ari Aster's movie with Florence Pugh? Of course you remember it. It's a Florence Pugh movie. Of course I remember it. It's a Florence Pugh movie.
Still thinking about it. I haven't stopped.
I mean, like, how jarring is it? Because, I mean, number one, it's all filmed in the daytime. I mean, you have the scene like very, very, very beginning of the film where, spoiler alert, her sister, is it, commits suicide, I think it is. And
I think it's her parents, right? Maybe the sister was there too, but the parents were in the bedroom and they did the gas thing.
Sister kills the parents and kills herself. That's what it is. Yeah, it's like a murder suicide deal. Sorry for spoiling Midsommar for you. But anyway, like that film, like after that point, like that's a pretty dark way to open a film. Really great way to open a film too. But then it's all kind of like they're outside at this like woodsy retreat with like these weird people that are kind of out and like doing
like
these
festival
weird daytime festivals. It's all bright, it's all colorful, it all just seems like you're at a summer camp, and then some naked old people throw themselves off of a cliff and you literally see their heads split open as they hit the ground. Like it's like that kind of shock, that jarring, like whoa, like you're just kind of like, wow. This film, we'll talk about it, but this film has a similar moment, I think, where I just wasn't expecting it to kind of be as gratuitous as it was necessarily, but I think it was really, really effective. And I think it varies tonally, because this is a very graphic kind of gratuitous film in every sense. Like it really doesn't shy away from letting the camera kind of be in there when it's kind of raw and dirty and things like that.
But it does
hold
back in certain cases too, which I think is interesting. I think that there's a bit of restraint in certain relationships and segments of this film that don't kind of mesh up with it. We'll get there, obviously, but
we'll get there when we talk about
I think it's interesting how it does kind of have a different feel depending on what portion of the film you're watching. You know,
it always has to be in step tonally with the film and things like that, though, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Yanny, thanks so much for the question. I just realized I don't have my score pulled up here, Nick.
Oh, I forgot. Also forgot. Brad also asked, if you caught a leprechaun, what would you do with his gold?
Oh, St. Patty's Day.
St. Patty's Day.
This is not going to come out for a few days, but we're recording on St. Patrick's Day. And what would I
know,
do with this gold?
You just shamed me about it, remember?
I don't know. How much gold does this little fucker have?
Who cares? Have you seen the price of gold lately? Who cares how much he's got? Maybe he's even got an ounce. Who cares?
Well, I mean, depending on how much it was, I don't know. I guess I'd pay off all my debt, I guess. I don't know.
That is the most
get a prostitute?
Gerald answer to a question I have ever heard.
Get a prostitute, go to a Michigan theater and watch Love Lies Bleeding. I don't know. If I had some gold, I could make that happen.
I don't. End of segment. Done. And the end.
I don't know. All right. Thank you guys for the questions. Nick, what are you going to do with the leprechaun's gold? Tell them real quick. Quick answer.
I'm going to get to the early score reveal for Love Lies Bleeding.
All right, you don't even want to tell us. That's fine.
Nothing will top the Geraldist answer to that question that you already gave. Like, nothing. I can't touch that. I'm going to pay off my debt. Oh, okay, sure.
Fair. All right, well, I'm going to be indebted to you if you do something good for me here. I don't want to influence you. I know a little card you got over there with you. But
listen to him.
Now, Love Lies Bleeding, directed by Rose Glass, starring Kristen Stewart, Katie O'Brien, Ed Harris, Dave Franco, and many others. And we're going to be discussing that film. But before we get there, we always start every review out by giving our score out of 10 up front individually. And we have not discussed it with each other yet in what we call the early score reveal, Nick.
Damn it, this always happens. I think I'm going to score and then I never score. It's not fair.
All right, let's have it, baby. 3, 2, 1. 7 out of 10 for me. Ooh, look
Looky
at that.
There. 8 look at
from
that.
Gerald. 8 from and Gerald.
8 out of 10 over here in green, by the way, because it's St. Patrick's
Feels
Day.
Feels weird for me to give a passing grade. I've been so.
Now, I got to tell you, man. So an 8 for me and a 7 lately. For Nick, guys. This is spoiler free for a few minutes. We will let you know when we get into spoilers, and there definitely will be, especially when we get to the last act of this movie. Some things I want to ask you about, Nick, and they'll be super spoilery, so we will let you know when we get there. Now, dude, this was a 7 for me. I saw this on Friday. We're recording on Sunday. It's been a couple days. This is a movie that, I'm sorry I'm going first, but I just got to tell you, like, it kind of implanted itself in my brain after I saw it, and grew there. Like, I've been thinking about it for like 2 days, and just like the artistic choices that were made by Glass in the movie, I mean, the performances in my opinion are all top tier. I think Ed Harris is a goddamn standout among fucking like crazy psychos in cinema in this movie. He is so good in this film, I think. But I also thought, you know, Kristen Stewart was really trustworthy as kind of the main character here. Katie O'Brien, who I was not familiar with, slayed it in this movie, no pun intended. So it was one of those films that it doesn't happen very often that my score is like increasing as I'm thinking about it. And I want to see it again so badly, because now that I know some of the twists and turns that happen in the movie, I feel like I can kind of focus on other things, not being concerned with how it's going to turn out because I already know. But I want to hear what you say in the spoiler-free section here, but I like this thing a lot, man. Like, it was right up my alley visually. It was the images. It was just stunning. It was shot beautifully. I know you haven't seen it, but Rose Glass's Saint Maud did the same thing for me. That was her first film. And when we get into the spoiler section, I'll talk a little bit about that movie and tell you some things in that movie that mirrored a lot of what we saw here. Without giving anything away quite yet. But to make a long story short, I love her style of filmmaking, and it really speaks to me. And I think that this story is also really important for, like, the queer hero and, like, the queer community. And it kind of, in my opinion, treats queer love as, like, kind of a superpower in this movie, which I think is a really cool kind of underlying commentary as well. Because this is like a gay Bonnie and Clyde, or, you know, it kind of reminds me of those kind of stories in Thelma and Louise and, you know, that kind of shit. So a lot of elements in this movie. We'll talk about it, I'm sure. What do you think here in the spoiler-free section about Love Lies Bleeding?
I mean, kind of to your point, like, you mentioned that your score just keeps increasing. I mean, that's what good cinema does, though, right? You walk out of the theater and you're still thinking about it days later, even after you've left the theater. You think the guy from Michigan's still thinking about this movie?
He might still be in the theater. I don't know if anybody's removed him yet.
They cordoned him off. They put like some caution tape up and stuff like that around him.
Oh my God.
I mean, so there's some definite things I want to talk about with this movie when we get into spoilers, because I really can't get into a lot of stuff until we get out of the spoiler section. But what I will say is, you're exactly correct. I think all the performances here are incredible. Katie O'Brien, please take me away with you wherever you want to. I am so yours good. To do as you command. Absolutely loved. She's sensational in this movie. Best thing about it, by an absolute country mile. Kristen Stewart is really phenomenal here. Dave Franco is easily just one of the biggest scumbags I've seen on screen in a long time, and he plays it. But probably just called up James and was like, "Hey, can you give me some pointers? I got to play a scumbag in this movie. You give me some pointers." And James Franco,
it's okay if I just play you when we were growing up. Is that okay?
James Franco was probably just like, "What do you mean?" And then he hung up on him.
yeah.
Like, yeah, Ed Harris, fantastic in this film. I think everybody, like I said, is sensational in this film. Really, really love the way that this is shot. I think that there's an intimacy that Rose Glass finds with the camera, the way this camera is just part of some of these scenes that really, really play out. There's a lot of different surrealist elements that I think work really, really well. It's just like from top to bottom, it's really, really great. It has some hiccups, I would say, and it has some weirdness to it. We'll get into it more as we get into as we get into spoilers and whatnot. But this is the kind of movie you pay to go to a movie theater to see. Don't see stuff that's going to challenge you. See stuff that's really gonna stick with you. Like you said, like this film's kind of stuck with me. I saw it earlier this afternoon, and like different scenes from it kind of keep replaying in my head as I think about them. And I really love that about cinema whenever it can do that. So
Well, I'm just happy that you got a film that you liked in 2024, so that's great. And like I said, I was literally at a 7 till like this morning, and I was thumbing through my pages here to get my score up, and I'm like, I think this is an 8 for me. You know,
this is
probably
one of those things where continued exposure to it would only make it better too.
Yeah.
You know, where you continue to watch it, you give it more and more viewings, it probably would only make your impressions of it just that much more. I think I've got a couple of fundamental issues with it that we'll get to when we get into spoilers. That'll keep it at a 7 for me, because I just have some logic trips that just don't really pass the test for me when we get to a certain point. We'll talk about that when we get into spoilers. But I mean, overall, just see it. It's great. It's great. It's best thing I've seen in the theater so far this year, which,
There you go. It's definitely one of the best for me, too. Although, I like Dune Part 2 a lot more than you did. So that was a perfect score for me. But otherwise, this is up there for me. So let's go ahead and get into spoilers, Nick, for Love Lies Bleeding, guys. So going forward, I'll put the timestamp below as well. Anything that we discuss going forward will be spoiler filled. For Love Lies Bleeding. If you have not seen it, please come back after you watch the movie. This is your warning that you will be spoiled.
Two Peas on a Podcast is made possible by our executive producers, Dan Brennick, Caleb Brownlee, Daniel Henderson, Michelle Dodo, Paul Prezula, Chris Yeaney, Julio Oliveira, Drew Hallam, Dan Roski, Jared Taylor, Michael Hill, Jason, David Powell, Joey Austin, Imran Javed, Kayla McCoy, Rebecca Lurch, Brett Parker, Justin Winters, Heidi England, and Brad Hargis. If you'd like access to bonus reviews, the ability to submit roulette wheel picks, and a litany of backlog content such as bonus top 10s, G-tunes, and My First Time, please consider going to patreon.com/2peasonapod and contribute just as little as $1 to have access to everything.
All right, Nick. So I mean, I scored it a little bit higher than you did, but like I said, I was sitting right around a 7 at my first, my initial reaction to it walking out of the theater. And I don't know if this is a good jump off point for the conversation, but the main issue, and this is putting it in general terms, but the main issue for me with the movie was the pacing was a bit haphazard. Like, there would be these moments in the film. Well, first of all, like the first 30 to 40 minutes or so is set up. So it's, introducing us to the characters and the background of these characters and kind of cultivating the relationship between Lou and Jackie. And all that stuff's awesome, by the way, but not a lot, quote unquote, happens from like an action perspective in that first half hour. So that's fine. But once we get past that, what I mean is there was a lot of these kind of like jolts of holy shit kind of moments, and then the pacing would drop back down to kind of slow and chill, and then something crazy would happen, and so I always thought, like, there was, when those moments happened in my head, I'm like, oh, here we go, like this shit's about to set off, it's going to get crazy, and then it would kind of be crazy for 5 minutes, and then it would kind of go back to the chill zone. So I know that was a little like, I didn't know how to feel about that, because I liked what I was seeing. It just didn't speak to like my reaction when these kind of big moments would happen in the movie, and Yaney asked about the aftermath when he dropped us the one big question. And that's kind of what I mean, is that aftermath strong enough for the viewer to kind of keep them hooked in?
Yeah, I definitely don't think it's paced super, super great, because I think it kind of lulls somewhere in the middle, I think, is really where the lull happens. Is somewhere in the middle act. You're kind of almost waiting for the action in the movie to kick off at that point. The first act, I think, is the best part of this movie. The first act is absolutely phenomenal. You kind of get the growth together of Lou and Jackie. Like, they become intimate, they get closer, all those kinds of different things. And then meanwhile, you've got, you know, scumbag Dave Franco as JJ doing, you know, beating the crap out of Beth, which is Lou's sister. And you've got just Ed Harris, who, like, they never really explicitly kind of get into the type of character he is. They kind of let him be a little bit more mysterious. Like, we know he's obviously, like, doing gun smuggling into Mexico. Like, sure. We obviously get those, like, the little scenes, like the quick little montage of that. But I like that the script really keeps him a little bit more mysterious. And
yeah,
we don't really ever see super cold-blooded moments from that character. I think it's actually a really good thing to kind of hold that card away from the audience and not let it, because they could have just shown us what a scumbag. I mean, obviously Lou is a scumbag, like Lou Senior, like her dad. He's obviously a scumbag, like through and through. Like, he's running this whole gun smuggling ring and everything like that. But
right, but to your point, he does take on that kind of like fatherly, almost like warmth kind of figure too. Like, especially when he gets Jackie out of jail, and you're like, is he actually trying to help her here? And like, he's kind of being cool.
He's got a mystery to him, you know. Yeah, right. he's got like a little bit of a mystery to him. I think once the action in the movie kicks off, and they, you know, spoiler alert, so JJ beats Beth like senseless, like to where she's in the hospital.
Yeah,
you know, because JJ is legitimately the lowest of the lowest scum sucking humanity. And I think, like, the film, so here's what the film does. Let me try to frame this the correct way, because I want to make sure I get it correct. It's got to give you, because the journey it's going to take these girls on, it's got to give you the scumbaggiest scumbag that ever scumbagged on film. So when they ice him, like, Jackie is, she's taking steroids, like, because she wants to be a bodybuilder. She wants to be in this bodybuilding competition. So she's regularly doing these steroid injections, which is just making her roid rage go crazy. So, like, she sees how emotional and affected Lou is by this, and then just goes over and just straight, like, beats him to death. It's, which is a great, like, such a raw, visceral, amazing, amazing scene. Then, like, his jaws hanging off. Ugh. Like,
yeah, super. that was a really good scene. That was really, one of really the ones scene. I was talking about, where it was like a jolt of energy in that scene, because she's lurking in the shadows there, and it's kind of almost shot like a horror movie when he's, like, creeping around the house because he hears something. And but it's quick. Like, she pops out of the shadows.
Because what it starts to do then is it's going to pull Lou and Jackie apart. And Jackie is just, like, so hyper-focused on competing in this competition, and is kind of now just hooked on the pump and hooked on this idea of getting bigger and just doing more and more and more steroids. Like, her rage is getting to a point where she's hallucinating and, like, having all these, like, different things. And so it kind of pulls those characters apart, but then it also starts to make them a little bit unlikable. So it has to write you with, it has to write the check of JJ's a wife beating scumbag, because it buys them a lot of goodwill.
Because that's worse than what they end up showing.
But yeah. So what I think my point is once the film gets to toward the end of the third act, that check runs out for me. That goodwill runs out for me, especially Lou. Like, Jackie, I think, is just like, we don't get a full hint of her entire backstory, but she calls home at one point and talks to someone, and they're basically like, don't ever call here again. Like, we just get a pen that there's a whole past there. I like those little threads that Rose Glass leaves to our imagination, by the way. I love those little threads of, like, you don't get to know exactly what happened. Like, same thing with their mom. Like, we don't know what ever happened to their mom.
Right.
Like I said, these characters start to become unlikable. They start to perform kind of really, really unlikable actions, and you can kind of sort of justify it in your mind, but it reaches a point to me, G, where that goodwill just runs out. And I'll tell you the exact moment that it happens. It's her sister is still recovering from the brutal attack from JJ. Her face is still all bruised and swollen. And then, like, she finds out that Lou is responsible for, like, partially responsible. I mean, Jackie's the one that did it, but I mean, Lou helped her cover it up, so whatever. But then they're in the, like, she confronts her about it, and, like, she has a, like, Beth has this huge breakdown, and then Lou's trying to find out where Jackie is, and then Lou immediately assaults her sister. Yeah. Like, right from that moment forward, like that was where that check ran out for me. And I like it because it's just like, you know that Beth is like such a victim and like trapped in that victim mentality. That's why she was trapped with JJ for that whole time. And then like, as her sister, like, you then take advantage of that fact, like you then immediately take advantage of that too.
And I think she, I agree with you, but I think that also Kristen Stewart's character there was more so like kind of infected with the love that she had for Jackie and the fear that she wouldn't be able to save her. You know what I mean? And in that moment right there, in that specific moment, that was more important to her than letting her sister kind of be the victim over and over and over again. Because
I mean, I know you're right. Like, yes, like dead on 100%. That's the analysis of the scene. But that's when that character, like, that's when she lost, like, that check that was like, okay, you killed this giant scumbag who is a wife beating piece of garbage. Like, so I'm going to extend you all the goodwill in the world. But that's when it runs out to me, because she then had become blinded by love the same way, in a way that her sister was blinded by love for JJ and continued to make excuses for him doing the horrible things that he had done. You know, like that's where, I mean, in that moment, Lou basically is no better than JJ to me.
Yeah. And it's implied too, which, like you said, Glass does this thing throughout the screenplay where it's implied and never really ironclad. But she also drops those little things about Lou being, you know, Kristen Stewart being not really a good person either, you know, and it's kind of perhaps she helped her dad kill people.
Not perhaps. And she 100% did. Like, we definitely see at least a couple of flashes of her firing a gun, like point blank executing people. Yeah. Right. Like, no, that's not even implied. That's definitely true.
So that's thrown in there too. So she's not a good person for all intents and purposes, but she is in love with Jackie, and you do kind of root for their love story. Course, I think even if you don't root for them, you know, individually, I think you root for them being together.
Yeah.
And somehow finding a way to be together through all this craziness or whatever. Let's talk a little bit about some specifics that really, because, you know, I told you it's been sticking in my mind. I want to talk a little bit about Ed Harris in this movie. I know Katie O'Brien, you said, was a standout performance for you. I think everybody was great, almost to equal effect. But for me, Ed Harris was an absolute fucking scene stealer in this movie. Like, he just like sucked up every piece of celluloid that was being used on him in this film.
Yeah.
And little things, you know, like the first time we see him and Jackie goes in and he's like, you know, because he owns this gun range, which is a cover for, you know, his gun smuggling or whatever. And she goes in to meet him for a job and he's like, you know, do you like guns? And she's like, no, not really. And he's like, what the fuck are you doing here then? You know, just like little line delivery is so perfect. And there's a scene, another scene that kind of stuck with me so hard is like he gets really pissed at his daughter kind of turning on him. And he's got this weird like bug collecting thing. He's like really fascinated with all these exotic bugs and stuff. And Ed Harris smashes the fucking terrarium or whatever and takes one of these like scorpion like bugs and just bites the head of it off.
Like a big giant horned beetle, I think it is.
Eats it or whatever. And it just fucking, and the camera cuts right away after that. But that kind of shit, just like, I wonder how much of that may have been improv'd, you know what I mean? Because Ed Harris is a fucking madman. But I loved him in this movie, and I want to talk a little bit about some of the surrealism, too. But do you want to touch on anything specific with the performances before we get there?
I mean, the performances are all just phenomenal. I mean, yeah. You get to wherever you're driving, big guy.
So, I want to talk a little bit about St. Maude, because I know you haven't seen it, but what did, before I use that as kind of a comparison here, because I can see the similarities in the filmmaking, obviously the same director, same screenwriter. Jackie's character, as Nick said, has been kind of hooked on steroids.
Kinda.
Rose Glass will do this thing where she'll do these intense close-ups of like her bicep or her back or thighs or whatever, and they're like getting stronger and growing when her emotions are heightened, you know, when she's angry or concerned about Lou or whatever, and almost like the Incredible Hulk type vibe. Right. And when she goes to essentially kill JJ in his house and he's lying on the ground bleeding or whatever, there's a quick shot of her after having done that, where she literally manhandled him and she looks bigger, right? Like she looks like she's grown to maybe like 8 feet tall or something like that. Is that fair to say? Like eight, like she's much bigger than she actually is in that scene. And then it happens again at the end of the movie. At the end of the movie, she's probably Attack of the 50-Foot Woman height, right? And there's a couple other surreal things that happen in like a dreamlike kind of setting throughout the film. But did that stuff work for you? Because when I left, actually not when I left, I was sitting there when the credits were rolling and I was kind of like wondering, and I think I've kind of come to terms with how I feel about it, but I'm curious what you feel about the kind of the surreal detachments in the movie here.
So the first one that you mentioned, like, it doesn't clock as anything abnormal, though. Like, all the shots of the muscles rippling, like, she's obviously shooting steroids and things like that. And it's kind of just, to me anyway, like, I just imagined it as just like, the way that, like, her muscles are affecting and, like, the way it's affecting her mental state and how much more obsessed she's getting with this idea of, like, getting that, like, you know, the pump and all those kind of things and really becoming a champion bodybuilder and winning that competition that she wants to win. When she kills him, I mean, yeah, there's a shot of her like looming over him, like ominously, but it doesn't really clock as she's abnormally large. It only clocks as this is shot from a very specific angle and shot specifically to look like she's this big imposing figure. Cause I mean, she is sculpted in this movie. Like she looks absolutely phenomenal, but the ending of the movie, the surrealist element you're talking about is it's not even a subtle difference. She's big enough to pick up Ed Harris, like a doll, like he's a Ken doll, mm-hmm. and throw him around. Like mm-hmm. that completely took me out of the movie. Cause it just kind of, to me,
so that didn't work for you.
It kind of came completely out of left field. I'm sure that Rose Glass is trying to make a point about like male power fantasies and all those kinds of different things in there. I don't want to try to speculate on what Rose Glass is necessarily trying to say, but
this is where I wanted to throw Saint Maud into the discussion real quick. And I can probably find these quick scenes and send them to you on YouTube, but I'll make this as short as I can because this isn't a Saint Maud review. But in that film, it's a religious film where Maud feels like she's possessed by the spirit of Jesus. Okay. So she thinks Jesus is inside her and she's doing his work on earth. So be that for whatever you take it for. But anyway, that's the general premise of the movie. And there's a couple scenes specifically where we as the audience see Maud doing things that humans can't do. There's one scene that's one of my favorite shots in cinema, honestly, in the last like 10 years of Maud like levitating on her back. Mm. And it has lightning and rain flashing and it's just beautifully shot. And then at the end of the movie, she's also levitating on the beach and she's engulfed in flames, but she's completely unharmed. So, but they're quick. And those are real surrealistic moments that are much, much different from the other narrative in the film. And in Love Lies Bleeding and talking about the ending there with her kind of Attack of the 50-Foot Woman scene, I sat there and I said, in my head, I'm going, and I saw this by myself. I didn't have anybody talk to about it, which is probably a good thing, but I'm thinking to myself, Rose Glass, what the hell was that? Because I was like, kind of like you, like, I like the subtle ones. Because in that scene with JJ, I did think to myself, oh, why is she 8 feet tall? Like, okay, this, you know. Right. So, but that was obvious, the 50-foot woman thing, right? So the way I saw it and thought about it and have been thinking about it afterwards is I think that the interpretation there is supposed to be that that was the way Lou sees her. And sees her as the most important, the tallest person in the room, you know, like she's my protector. She can, you know, protect me from anything, including my dad, who's been a dominant kind of towering figure over me my whole life.
Right. Yeah.
But now I have her. So obviously she wasn't really 50 feet tall, but that was what I think the implication was there. And to make it even more beautiful from like a romantic perspective, when we cut to the end and we find out that Daisy, I think it was, and was it Daisy in the truck? I think that was still alive.
Yeah, it was Daisy. Yeah.
Yeah. And we find out Daisy's still alive. Kristen Stewart as Jackie's asleep, is trying to basically protect her by making sure the body's disposed of and, you know, not even waking her up from her nap to take care of it. So even though it's kind of fucked up.
What a great final shot of a film, though, as the credits start to roll, of just in the foreground, you have Jackie sleeping in the truck, and then you just have Kristen Stewart as Lou dragging a corpse out into a field, and then like literally gets like halfway out in the field with it, takes out a pack of smokes from her purse, and then just sits there and starts smoking in the background, like looking around, like, what am I supposed to do with this corpse and stuff? What a great final shot. Like, there's some just amazing shots of this movie.
I agree. The thing with the 50-foot woman, though, not working for you, I was kind of there and I just thought about it more and more. And I think the reason that I would settle on that it worked for me if I had to pick one or the other is because of the swing that Glass took with it and because I can see the similarities in a movie like Saint Maud. And I get, or at least I think I get, what she was kind of trying to say with it, while at the same time being that kind of jaw opening moment where it's like, what is this? You know what I mean? Like, even if you like it or don't like it, you're going to be surprised by it.
I don't think it affects my score at all. I think my score would be the same regardless. I just don't, the scene just kind of doesn't work for me only because it sort of comes out of left field. The rest of the surrealist moments that we see in the film, we can chalk up to basically Jackie hallucinating when she's probably not eating and is on not just steroids, but probably some kind of drugs. We don't really see all the concoctions that they're doing and taking at all these different times. But she has that one moment when she's at the bodybuilding competition and she vomits on the stage, but she's hallucinating that she vomited up Lou's body on the stage. Like, we see those kind of surrealist moments, but in those moments, Glass takes us right back away from it. It's kind of like you said with Saint Maud. It's a quick thing. It's a really quick shot of like she vomits up Lou's body and then Lou like looks up at her and says something, and then bam, we're back to reality. But the film doesn't have that moment where it takes you back to reality in that sense. Like, and so here's what I'm left to think, and I'm gonna push a one big question on you at the end of this film, G. Which one of these two is going to kill the other one first?
Oh, between Lou and Jackie?
Do you think this is going to be a happily ever after thing? Because one of them is going to kill the other one at some point. I really, really think. I think that they'll be okay for maybe a little while or whatever, but
I don't know. I never contemplated that because I'm a fan of their love story. Like, I kind of...
this is not going to be a happy ending.
I mean, it's morbid. I mean, it's not, you know, an everyday white picket fence. I'm sorry to have them
feel like... I mean, that's just how I felt about it, too, though. Like, I just feel like these two are headed for disaster. Like, they're out of the immediate danger, but yeah.
I think probably Jackie, because she was showing that... I mean, there was a scene where she left and she kind of assaulted Lou in that one scene and then left. So she obviously has a little bit more of a violent tendency to her. So I guess if I had to pick, I would say probably Jackie's going to do something she regrets. And, you know,
I don't even think, I think it's even more of a rhetorical question now that I think more about it. I don't necessarily, but I just don't feel that this is a happy ending for these characters. I feel like did they get away?
I mean, you're right.
Did Ed Harris's character get arrested and like is going to be brought to justice? Like, it was a really, really great point in the script where they decide to get rid of JJ's body up at this cliff that Lou knows her dad's been literally, like, quite literally dumping. That's where all the bodies are buried, is down in this ravine, like way, way deep in there. And everything. And I love that she knows about that. And she kind of uses that almost as insurance to set up her dad. Like, here's one question I want to ask you too, G, before we wrap on this thing. I could have done without JJ as an informant. Like, that to me came so far out of left field.
I didn't see that coming though, which I kind of like.
I didn't see it coming.
I think that played into Kristen Stewart kind of getting off the hook too, though, because then it definitely makes it look like, Ed Harris found out about it and fucking killed him. You know what I mean? Just like all the other ones that are probably down there. So it made sense to why they would pin it on Ed Harris.
Oh, that made sense perfectly. Yeah.
Found that. So, but yeah, I agree with you that it didn't really have to be there for the story to play out. I don't think it had to be there.
Yeah. I didn't need it.
No, I didn't either. What I was going to tell you too, though, in relation to what you're touching on there, is that when Ed Harris makes that phone call to Lou, his daughter,
yeah,
and he's like, look, this is what we're going to do. You know, And he had, and also I didn't really like a point got docked off or so, because there's a section in the film when he gets Jackie out of jail in Vegas, and then she kind of becomes like a robotic, like Terminator, where she just like kills people because he tells her to. And that wasn't really in keeping with her character up to that point. So I don't know if it was her mental state or the steroids or the fear or like whatever. But anyway, she kind of becomes a robot where she's just fucking, you know, killing people at point blank range. And she shoots Daisy. And that's another scene that I was talking about that I'm like, oh, shit. And then it kind of avalanches because the FBI agents come in the house and she's hiding the body while the cat's trying to fucking eat the blood or whatever behind the couch. So there's a lot of tension in that scene.
I think that scene of her shooting Daisy would have played out much, much better if they hadn't, like, they kind of gave it away. Like, you knew that she was going to go kill Daisy, because why else is he giving her a gun and then being like, call me when it's done?
Right.
You knew that she was going to go kill Daisy, because obviously Daisy had made them. She's driving JJ's car. Lou was driving JJ's right. car, and Jackie was driving eyewitness. Lou's truck. Daisy knew, and that's why they kind of needed to get rid of her. I wish it didn't have that scene of him basically putting the gun down in front of Jackie and being like, call me when it's done. Because at that point, I'm just waiting for it to happen. That scene would have played out even like so much more impactful if all of a sudden the next time that we see Jackie after Lou Sr. picks her up in Vegas and they have that ride home, she almost gets out, but then, you know, doesn't get out. And he's like, I'm going to help you. We'll do all this different stuff. You'll be okay. I promise you'll be okay. You just have to, and you could just leave it hanging there with, you just have to do everything I say and everything's going to be okay for you and Lou and all this different stuff. And then literally the next time we see Jackie is her plugging Daisy. Like that to me would have been like mind blowing. Like, oh my God, I would have
probably would have even bumped this
up to like between an 8 or even a 9 maybe. Like,
yeah, that would have made it a better.
It would have been so good.
It would have been more impactful for sure.
Like, we're knocking different things about this film, but it's sensational in a lot of different ways. It's a really, really great watch. And you should definitely, if you have seen it, go see it again. But if you haven't seen it and for some reason you're still listening all the way through the spoiler stuff, I think this is one of those films where the spoilers don't necessarily matter because it's so well made and it's so well shot and the characters are so investing. You really, really do get invested in Lou and Jackie's love story and they're kind of almost like I said, I really just feel like it's kind of a tragic ending because I really feel like these two characters are headed for bad or worse things together.
I mean, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough road,
like regardless.
I mean, anyway, you look at it,
it's great though. It's great though. I'm really, really glad this was a much needed breath of fresh air at the cinema for me after a lot of not great stuff.
Keep an eye on one thing's for sure. I'll be seated for anything Rose Glass does. I love Saint Maud too.
I really want to see Saint Maud now.
Yeah, it's really good, man. You should check it out. I may have given too much away for you, but you should check it out. It's good. I mean, it got labeled as a religious horror, but it's not. I mean, it's got horrific stuff in it, but it's not like a quote unquote horror, you know, your standard run of the mill horror movie. So I think you would dig it. So Love Lies Bleeding, in summary, Nick gave it a 7. I gave it an 8, which is a 7.5, I think.
No.
Right? Is that accurate? A 7.5 from The Piece.
That's tied. That's tied for best movie of the year on The Piece right now with a 7.5. Tied with Dune Part 2.
It's one of my faves of the year. I
should lower my Dune Part 2 score so this is higher.
No, watch out. You should increase it because you need to fix that.
I should
that.
Lower it even more. I've only gotten more frustrated about elements of Dune 2 the more I talk about it with different
God
people,
damn
too.
It. God damn it. I want to give it an 11 now, so I'm going the other direction. I tell you what is going to be exciting is when we get together next week, because we're going to be discussing the new Roadhouse remake starring Mr. Jake Gyllenhaal. It's going to be premiering on Amazon Prime, I think, on Friday. But we will be reviewing that on the show next week, Nick. That'll be the main review. And then I think the following week, we're going to do the new Ghostbusters. I'm looking forward to that.
I get to see the new Ghostbusters this Thursday. I'm seeing it opening day. Can't wait. Seeing it in the biggest theater here, at least, that I possibly can. Haven't seen anything about advanced reviews or anything like that. Don't care. I just want to see some busting, some ghosts be busted. And I'm really hoping that it's... I liked Afterlife. I thought Afterlife was a really, really nice film. So I'm really hoping this is more in the same vein.
You know what the guy in the Michigan Roadhouse says?
Roadhouse, I do not.
Let's do it. Go in with an open mind, dude. It has nothing to do. Don't even think about the original. Just go in with the open mind.
Okay, I will think about the original because there's no way it could possibly be worse.
By the way, Winters, our patron, put the original one on the roulette.
Of course he did.
Whenever we spin that again.
I bet you if we pick it, he's going to want to come on to talk about it, too.
Let's do it.
Just because it's Swayze and he knows. He knows.
By the way, you didn't let me use my joke. You know what the guy in the Michigan theater says about Ghostbusters? Busting makes me feel good. You know what I mean? And then
good night, everybody.
All right. That was our discussion on Love, Lies, Bleeding. Let's get together next week and talk about shirtless Gyllenhaal and Roadhouse and bar fights and all that stuff. Until then, buddy, happy St. Patrick's Day and have a good week. I'll miss you. I'll see you next Sunday.
Okay. Take good care of yourselves out there, everybody. Be good. Be good. Be kind to yourselves, especially.
Oh, yeah.